they're elves, aren't we? Should we be listening? Should we be listening to the Goblin Podcast Network at gbncom.com?
This show is part of the Goblin Podcast Network, mate. You probably knew that, though.
All right.
In a town in the woods at the top of a hill, there's a house where no one lives. So you take a big bag of your big city money there and buy it. But at night when the house is dark and you're all alone, there's a noise upstairs. At the top of the stairs there's a door and you take a deep breath and try it. And the flashlight shows you something moving just inside the door. It's a tattered dress and a feeling you have felt somewhere before.
And there's a creepy doll that always follows you. It's got a ruined eye.
Gamers Haven Podcast, a gaming podcast for game masters of all gaming systems. So grab your dice bags and we'll get your game on. Well, hello there, everyone out there in internet land. We continue on our part two here of our races, magic, and technology. Today, we go into the technology aspect a bit more and we'll start talking a bit more about races, but enjoy the show. There won't be a new show next week because I'll be in South Dakota, but deal with it. We may have to cut back on the shows at least up until after Jeremy gets hitched in early June, so you might not see a new episode then. There's not going to be any feedback at the end of this episode, although we got some great emails to go over once we can all get together and record again. But just because Jeremy's got some like wedding thing going on, he has to, you know, deal with that, I suppose. Oh well, he just got to get his priorities together. But, you know, enjoy the show. Bye.
Maybe. Just maybe my boys can stop him from getting the book. Yeah, maybe I'm a Chinese jet pilot.
In a broken world where magic has been outlawed.
The entire village knows your candles have a little somewhat special about them.
Like mother, like daughter.
Hang her. She nearly burned the village down.
One family rules it all.
He did this! He killed my baby! He's a monster! No better than the fiend he calls a father!
One woman cursed with magic.
What have I done?
Becomes the pawn in a game of thrones that will tear the world apart.
Who is the woman you're so urgent to find?
Her mother.
Does she wear the red?
I'm not sure, my lord. It is said that she is breathable. By all indications, though, she's unable to control it.
You will kill her.
Of course, my lord.
Do you think he knows?
When we find the woman, she will destroy him for us.
When her daughter is stolen...
Joss! They stole my Joss!
She wants only one thing. To get her back.
You were brave to have come here for me, my dear. You have no idea how foolish that bravery was, though. She was just a child. She was there to serve you.
What do you know of a mother's love? I will be killing you.
But that all changes when she finds her.
What have they done to you?
Join me. Together we can stop the Overlord. The children will go free.
Never!
Daughter of the Sun, the epic fantasy novel by Lonnie Ezell. Find out more about the novel, the author, and the podcast at LonnieEzell.com.
Stand by for action.
Sometimes things like guns aren't as spectacular. I mean, think about that. It's like, in our world, we don't have, nobody can throw a fireball.
Right.
But they can shoot you.
Yeah.
I mean, when guns came out and armor was becoming useless.
We haven't been a new ceramic body armor.
But still, I'm talking about like that.
What's the difference between that and mage armor? You
know? Yeah.
Nothing really.
There isn't. One's a different type. One's an energy and one's physical armor.
Mm-hmm.
So then we got to talk about, so on the technology side, where is your technology level? Is it normal that everybody has this technology? Are you going into sci-fi? If you want to stick it with fantasy, do you want to have the technology to be ancient? Like I said, you can still have mages. They're just different.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do you handle magic and technology in Thera? Since we've talked about Thera, you know, let's get
it
a perspective.
It depends on the situation, because... most people are not opposed.
Because I know on yours is you have like segments of Earth, and you've already said, I mean, you can have things pop up on Thera. It's like, hey, I have a lightsaber.
The world was built in the sense of that way back when the individuals that were taking over had so much technology. With the release of magic destroyed a lot of that. Now, Thera-based technology is not affected by the protections.
Right.
Outside sources of technology usually are. That's why I'm not concerned about a person that goes to Earth, drives a tank into Thera. Are they going to cause destruction? Yes. But guess what? At some point, either that tank's going to be filled with gremlins, or it's going to stop working. Something's going to happen to it.
Or some mage is going to polymorph it into a swarm.
Well, there's that, too. It's not going to have any resistance.
Right.
But even if nobody does that, there are forces working against it. Now, steam tanks on Thera, built by the Atlanteans, were built there.
Right.
They function fine. And it really depends on the society. In parts of Andradia, one of the major empires, magic-powered or technological-powered farming devices are very popular, or getting more popular, because there are so many people that need to be fed.
Right.
If you can jump into a machine...
Well, around the time of the Industrial Revolution, I mean, that's when population started booming.
Now, there are other societies that think magic and technology is a corruption.
Right.
Like divine
Look
magic.
At the Arcano, the Architects of the Flesh from Feng Shui.
Yeah.
In the future, they've you know, perverted magic and technology into Arcano magic.
In Thera, a corruption would be taking divine magic or natural magic and combining up technology. I'm not talking about, like, simple technology. I'm talking about, like, steam tanks powered by godly magic. That's kind of... There's a purity about the divine magic that should not be disrupted by technology. Arcane magic isn't as frowned upon. The problem is it's still expensive. It takes so much willpower, life force, material components, that sometimes the technology is cheaper to a point. There could come a time where soldiers have guns, but they also have healing potions. Making healing potions pretty cheap. Giving everybody a +2 sword, not necessarily so.
Right.
Depends on the time period. Also, I don't care, you know, like I said, I don't mind if somebody shows up with a lightsaber, I'm probably not going to affect their particular weapon, because that's part of their character.
Right.
And actually, I would allow them, if they came up with the money and experience, they could probably enchant it. I think that'd be cool. A lightsaber that... I don't know.
Flaming Burst!
Yeah, or Dancing, or Defender.
I know.
You know, stuff like that.
It's the mixing genre.
Now, especially when you get to the future, think about that. This mage walks into the enemy ship. He starts lobbing fireballs down the hallway. And when you think he's done, he then pulls out his laser gun and starts shooting at you.
Yeah.
You know,
it's the same concept of using a wand of fireballs.
Exactly. And maybe he has both a wand of fireballs and a laser gun. There's nothing wrong with combining it. You have to look at society. How is society going to see it? It also depends on the source of magic. If you're going to have a piece of technology that instead of steam-powered is soul-powered, there's something evil about that.
Ooh, yeah.
That's different. That's necromancy to its most extreme mixing of technology. That's frowned upon. We're not talking... Magic that is okay is like that tank, steam tank, that is resistant to magic, or has a fireball lobber on top, or a lightning bolt lobber. That type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
The gods themselves frown upon... Well, let me take that back. They don't frown upon, per se. They don't agree with a lot of the technology.
Right.
It's going to happen, and it's not their place to stop it. But that's not their... That's not their focus. So on my world, it's mostly interchangeable. Like, you know, this is the flip side of a coin. It's just sometimes the technology functions better, and sometimes the magic functions better.
Yeah.
When your gun runs out of bullets and you're out in the middle of the wilderness, how are you going to make more bullets?
Right.
When that mage or that sorcerer or that priest can either pray, sleep, or read their book and recharge.
Right.
Or even the wand. I can just cast spells into that wand. If it was made properly, it's going to recharge. Your gun?
You're
out of luck.
Yeah.
When the nuclear power source in your atomic tank does give up.
Yeah.
Where are you going to get more radioactive fuel?
Mr. Fugit.
When you drive that car through the portal down the, you know, the Great Blight, that's fine and dandy, but what happens when you run out of gas?
Yeah. Favorite is kind of big.
I mean, seriously.
Life's kind of big.
Now, that doesn't mean there won't be people that come along and enchant your car.
Yeah.
If anything, I actually look at it that it's more disruptive for people from my fantasy world to go to Earth than the other way around. Mm-hmm. Because when they go to Earth, they go into a setting that either, one, the magic is so limited or non-existent that the people don't know what to do.
Right.
And that's something that you need to think about when you're doing your world creation. How is society going to look at this? When a technological advanced society meets a magically advanced society, what's going to happen? And what happens when that society that has both technology and magic meets that one that just has technology? I mean, think about that. If portals opened up right now, and these soldiers in full battle armor with machine guns and wands of disintegration walked out, mm-hmm. plus they could heal themselves by drinking potions, plus they were genetically altered, what were we going to do?
Yeah. Hide.
On the other extreme, think about an F-16. I don't even know what they're up to now. I always think of F-16s. Flying against a dragon. That'd be a kind of cool fight.
Yeah.
That dragon, his flight isn't as good. The F, you know, 16 is doing loops around him. But still, I mean, that'd be pretty sweet.
Yeah, yeah, realistically, you know, get a Harrier in there.
Well, yeah, and these are all things
that whole squadron of fighter planes. Yeah. Oh yeah, you know, it's something I don't think a lot of people think about.
No, think about your mage and your warriors with the magical items is suddenly appearing in the middle of New York City.
And how they would think about it. There's a great movie called a Hong Kong movie called The Iceman Cometh, starring Yuen Biao, about an ancient Chinese warrior who is frozen in ice and thawed out in the modern day, and he has to go track down this evil sorcerer. I think it was an evil sorcerer. And it's all about him dealing. The movie was made in the 80s in Hong Kong, so it's obviously a low budget, but it dealt with some of that. It's kind of interesting. And it's like you can have all the cliches, you know. I mean, feng shui, we had a lot of fun in feng shui dealing with cliches like that of, you know, the guy from 6980 China first seeing a television for the first time, you know, saying, what is this, you know, scrying device, or, you know, this moving window, or, you know, it's these horseless carriages and, you know, well, steel monsters.
Didn't your magically powered people end up on Earth at some point? They got a fire engine or something? And
yeah.
A firefighter named Bling Bling?
Yes, it was in my first D&D campaign. It was an April Fool's Day episode where I had an NPC mage the characters run into who was eventually going to become the new god of magic, flubbed a spell and transported everyone into our hometown, which was Lawrence, Kansas. And everyone appeared in different areas, and they all had to find out where everyone else was. And they ended up, one guy appeared out at the fountain, on campus. One appeared out at, in front of the Granada. One appeared out, I can't remember now, something like a Hastings, I think. And they all had to find their way to, Memorial Stadium. And, one way or another, like one thing led to another, a fire truck got called in and all this crazy stuff, and they all teleported back to their, to the fantasy world, and they took half the fire engine with them, and three firefighters and a little child. It's pretty funny, actually.
But, I mean, that's all something to think about, too. Because you should be willing to play with the different planner stuff, your magic and or technology would allow travel like that, or if I believe it should, because I think it makes it a lot of fun.
Oh yeah.
Whether it's a, you know,
if you do it right, it's a lot of fun.
April Fools or
as long
or
as your players, you know, want to have fun with it.
Yeah. Also play around with it. I mean, I like to run every once in a while a Christmas one.
Yeah.
Where
no,
the
that's
magic
a lot of fun.
Is not, it's really silly.
What was that? We had to find the golden Santa.
Yeah, the golden Santas and the magic cookies and, you know, crap like that. Uh-huh. Well, it's all silly and kind of doesn't have anything to do with your world, but you should play around with it. So you can mix tech. Though there is something interesting about having that invasion of the corrupted technology magic and having an invasion of that.
Yeah, it's just the way I use magic. Because magic still goes off. It's like without the somatic components, like magic missiles, they go off. But if you don't use a somatic component, which includes where you're supposed to, where they're supposed to go, they go... Because they're not controlled.
Right.
They don't, you know, the way you control magic missiles is you're, you know, you do the components and you go, you know, there, and they go, hit the target. If you don't point where they're supposed to go, you just do the spell, oh, and the magic missiles go, and they go, look, birdie.
That's, you know, something also people forget to think about. If I'm playing in a modern setting, there's different types of spells I'm going to take than if I'm in a... like a fantasy.
Yeah.
You're not going to take any long...
I've never really looked too much at that. What is that? Urban Arcana?
Even that, I mean, you wouldn't even have to have that. I mean, just think about it this way. In our world, you don't want a lot of attack spells.
No, you want defense.
You want defensive, and you want things like sleep spells, charm spells, things like that, that allow you to get out of trouble. Because if you lob a fireball at someone... the cops are going to show up, and they're not going to ask questions.
They're just going to
try to either get you off the street or shoot you.
Smurf.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that don't...
isn't touched upon.
I mean, if you're going to play them, that's why if I have somebody come from Earth, if they're a mage, I limit their evocation spells a lot.
Right.
Because
you're not gonna
it's
use
not
evocation.
That type of magic. We don't see that on Earth. Even a lot of the myths don't see that.
Right.
We don't talk about that in mythology. We talk about, there are magic swords. There are people that can create castles. We don't have a lot of people lobbing fireballs.
No, right. That wasn't even in the original fantasy books.
No, magic is very low key or in the.
Oh yeah, I mean the quintessential fantasy books people think of is obviously the Lord of the Rings, and you know, Gandalf wasn't lobbing fireballs in that.
He did lob flaming pine cones during The Hobbit, which is awesome. He's stuck in the trees, and he's like...
No, The Hobbit was awesome.
Though that whole thing with light, I think that's my favorite one. It's a simple
light.
Oh,
when he's riding out, shines the light out.
I say it's simple light, but it's holy light. So
yeah,
like,
that was very cool.
But he wasn't a wizard, by the way. You know, he wasn't a wizard. He's more of an angel.
Well, that's just it, though, is the wizards in that setting are stupidly powerful like that.
Yeah.
And...
which was awesome.
That's my problem with D&D and people who play D&D thinking, I want to run it like Lord of the Rings, because the mages in D&D aren't that. It's like,
you're not
supposed to be. No, it's like, and that's the problem I have with Lord of the Rings RPG. It's like, you can play a wizard. No.
Not a true wizard.
No.
And I've never actually read their books.
See, Middle-earth role-playing, the original Middle-earth role-playing game books, did not have spellcasters. Yeah, did not have spellcasters.
Well, I understand it all fit. 4,000-page rule books with a million tables.
Magic, the elves had different types of magic.
Merp was Rolemaster Light, apparently.
Yeah,
but Rolemaster was like 400 volumes.
Well, but they did things
tables.
Like...
Merp was,
Elven,
was three separate books.
Elven chain, just the way it was made, was magic. The elven rope, just the way it was made, was magic. It was because it was made by elves.
Mm-hmm.
Or it was made by dwarves, you know. So, but yeah, I mean, if I'm playing in a modern setting, the attack spell should be, I'm not saying non-existent, but they need to be...
Well, I mean, I would consider Lord of the Rings more a low magic setting than high magic setting. You have uber powerful magic users, but...
They don't use it.
Yeah.
They don't have any reason to.
Because it's like, yeah.
Well, and also it seems that there's a lot of side effects.
Mm-hmm.
There's something there that keeps them from doing that.
Like the Balrog?
Yeah, but he could be...
Smurf.
So.
The Balrog was just cool.
I did like that scene, though, where he told them all to run. And it's like,
fly! Holy crap! Fly, you fools.
Like...
That was a whole good
I know what's going to happen, but...
God.
That was the best movie. That's the first one.
But yeah, that's something they do forget. People forget.
I think the problem with the second and third one was there was more combat than the story.
Well, let's look at the second one. I like the director's cut. The extended cut was much better than the theatrical one. The Return of the King, it's meh.
It was just
the extended
total.
One was just
smurfing
long, and the movie had like 12 endings, and I was just like, all right.
Yeah.
But the book did too.
Yes, I know. I hated that book.
I didn't mind. The books were fine. I liked them. It's just a different setting.
Yeah, play Mage and Call of Cthulhu and go crazy.
But how do you handle like magic and technology in your world, though? I mean, we haven't really dealt with that. And yours is playing.
Jeremy's way of dealing with it, with the balancing like scales, is pretty much the same way that it works in my world. The more technology that comes into play, the weaker magic gets. It's you know, they have to equal. It's like you have a scale from 1 to 100. Say magic is a 40, that means technology is a 60. They always have to equal 100, depending upon what age, depends on which one is the more powerful aspect
right.
of the two. Like, but a lot of technology in my world actually does have a magical background, like the Dwarven Blast Powder and stuff. It's, you know, it's crystal rock that's been enchanted. The dwarves, and I know this goes against, like, all, you know, role-playing fantasy games, but the dwarves in my world are the magic, they're the really magic-oriented race.
Sure.
That is actually something that I wish people wouldn't always get stuck on, is that,
dwarves
aren't magic. That's foolish.
That's foolish and
look
stupid.
At magic in a different way. It's a tool.
Well, that segues a bit into the racist thing, you know, how different races will look at magic and technology in different ways.
Yeah. Like the Dwarven Blast Powder.
The elf would be part of the magic, whereas
No, elves are not part of the magic. Elves, actually, in my world, are not very magic-oriented, which is why it's uncommon to see, like, an elven spellcaster. They don't use it. They're part of nature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're very heavily entwined with nature. They know earth magic. Magic.
Well, it's because
they're
such a long-lived race that they're so a long-lived race. I mean, I'm still fascinated by the long-lived race idea.
Yeah.
Of how would you look at change?
See, the interesting
like,
thing
oh,
is
like, oh, hey, in 1,000 years of your life, you see this river completely
you
dry
still
up
see,
you know?
Because
still,
you guys overutilized it.
You still see the change of. If you're talking about elves, even though they're not noticing the change of their own physical bodies, like their wife or husband never changes, but life around them does. In the sense of the it always becomes it's spring, summer, fall, you know, winter.
See, it's never come up.
It's always changing. Yes, if you watch that river, most elves don't just sit there and go, "I'm gonna watch this river." But they will do things like, I'm going to learn how to paint. They work on that for 20 years and go, I'm bored. I'm going to go work on this. And that's why instead of being a super master of one thing, they're a craftsman of many
things.
They're
a jack of all trades.
A jack of, though, that one master, oh my God. If you're a bard and you want the best musical instrument, you find the elven crafter of a musical instrument. And those guitars he makes, or those lutes, or whatever, are perfect.
But yeah, what hasn't ever actually come up in my game is, you know, we've talked about the Shattered Continent, Mashra Aina.
Mm-hmm.
And most people know that, yeah, that's where the elves used to come from. And that's where they used to live. They had their own continent. A lot of people don't think about, when they think about it, is, you know, it's very Roman in its architecture and structure. But the fact of the matter was, is the elves, when they lived on that continent, were a lot more like humans in the way they did things. You know, they didn't give a damn what they did to the environment and stuff. And they, you know, they basically destroyed their own island because they polluted it so bad that when the magic from the asteroid did hit, it mixed with the destruction that they had wreaked themselves and caused things like, you know, the dead to walk again. The island is completely uninhabitable now. They realized and understood the mistake that they made. So that when they fled the island, well, they blamed it on everybody else because they didn't want to accept responsibility for their own mistakes, which is an entirely human thing to do. And I know who's going to do that. Well, you know, all the races are somewhat related, and they're all going to show a lot of the same fallibilities.
Oh yeah,
with fallacies. Sorry. So when they came over here, they recognized what they did, and so instead of doing that again, they tried to become more in step and in sync with nature. And that's why the elves in my world are, you know, like tree-hugging hippies.
See, my elves are different. Like, that's why when people joke about being tree-hugging hippies, I just kind of shake my head, because my elves aren't tree-hugging hippies.
No, your elves are more like my elves of Warhammer.
My elves are up here because they know that they're going to live so long. No, those elves in Warhammer, though, they don't know how to fight. No, they get machine gunned by a bunch of dirty humans.
No, that wasn't the high elves not knowing how to fight. That was not the high elves knowing how to fight. That was Terra not knowing how to fight against that weapon.
I don't
the
care. High elves, my dirty little Imperial
weapon skill
human.
5, ballistic
don't
skill
care.
5. That's higher than any other standard unit in the game.
Oh, all their pitiful little fancy smants and dancing.
They got stupid hats. Armies full of stupid hats just need to be wiped out.
Like the Chaos Dwarfs.
Like the Chaos Dwarfs. Just the stupid hats.
That is one thing that players have problems with.
What, stupid hats?
No, that is something about long-lived races. Something that a lot of players have problems with, and I understand this, is in my world, elves were one of the first races.
Right. Well, it's putting yourself into the perspective of the race that you want to play or the race you want to create. You know?
And also, they were the first ones...
So I guess we're talking about our races now, by the way.
They were the first ones to figure out magic and arcane magic as a race. So there is something to be said about when they look at a human and just kind of nonchalantly wave them away, it's because a lot of them are that good.
Yeah.
They can really...
Well, a lot of people are going to look at elves like the elves from Tolkien. And, you know, oh, they live forever, they're high and mighty, they're snobby.
Well, it's not really a snobbiness, though.
It's just an attitude.
Yeah, but that's what the other races will look at.
Well, that's true.
And you know, I see where you're coming with it. They're snobby. It's like Marlon Brando. Marlon Brando was a jerk, but he was Marlon Brando.
Yeah.
So he could be a jerk.
He is that good.
It's like the elves are that good.
There would be elven generals and warriors that they are that good.
Yeah.
And if you do piss off the elven empire enough, they may just send out 12 guys.
But the way I would balance it though is you have your elves, but I would actually not gather the elves into one big kingdom because they probably wouldn't get along.
See, my no,
with
mine
that,
are
that long of a lifespan, they would hold grudges.
Well,
forever.
My elven nation is basically long. One area, but you're right.
Well, the race could be like in mine. The elves are cursed.
Well, there is an elven. There is a great
bastard.
A high elven king, mm-hmm. But the problem is you have different factions within that, and that's why the elves haven't taken over because
right.
While they don't fight, they can't agree on anything.
Right.
Well, they all have different
just
opinions.
Because
they
my elves
they're debating
are immortal,
for the last 1,000 years over this. Yeah.
Well, just because my elves are immortal doesn't mean that they forever stay on the world either. There is a retirement process, you might say, when the elven spirit basically moves on. Now, he was alive all the way, but he made that journey into the afterlife.
Sure.
Physically. He just walked into the elven afterlife.
They did a Mists of Avalon.
Some of them,
whatever, yeah.
Some of them stay on the planet, but I mean, you can do long-lived races. It's just, I don't think player characters should be the old ones. If somebody says, "I want to be 100 years old," I'd say, "No, you're 120 years old. You're a teenager by elven standards."
Well, think of that childhood.
Teenagers
are going to be the ones that are going to explore. By the time they get to adulthood, usually all of them have explored. They're ready to settle down because they already know what they were curious about. Now all they do is just expand on their knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not going to... It's like an 800-year-old elf is not going to go out and,
mm-hmm.
you know,
and a lot
ride
of elves,
from one continent to another.
And a lot of elves would do things just because they can.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm going to walk around the world.
And a lot
Why?
Of elves
because
also
I can.
Don't want to leave their elven forest. Elven Nations is a beautiful place.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you're in politics or you are an active defender, you can live your existence in basically paradise. Do you have to farm? No, the nature gives you everything.
And the elven laissez-faire look at it. It's like, hey, you know, what happens outside this forest?
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter to us. We're going to still be
mine
here.
Mine has been enchanted.
And it's like you said that one, last time was it's like, hey, we're dealing with this human nation, and oh, well, they insulted us. All right, well,
come back in 20 years.
We'll come back in 20 years, and we'll see if we can do something. Or
yep.
You know, I'm going to come back in 100 years.
We're
and I'll talk to your and I'll talk to your children.
Yeah,
to see if they want to deal.
And that's why also some grudges in elven society is such a big sin. Because think about that. You don't want to hold a grudge that long because you're going to be there. You're not moving on to the actual... In 1,000 years, you might still be there. So do you want to hold a grudge that long?
Right.
That causes so many problems. So they may be more forgiving in some ways.
Right.
Among themselves.
On the other hand, dwarves...
Dwarves are obstinate.
And they can live to be about 500-600 years old. They're another long-lived race.
They're longer than that in my world, but...
Well.
They're different. They do have clan wars.
Yes, they do, but they don't...
But they'll come together in if there's a bigger problem.
Yeah.
Like goblins? Orcs?
But the dwarves are even more when it comes to... Yes, they want to make money. They want to betray.
See,
they want to build.
I sort of think as dwarves is sort of big brother, little brothers. They fight. They knock each other around. They do their thing. But when something threatens the family, they just get up and go, what?
Well,
what are you doing? Oh, it's go time. And they both kick the crap out of you.
Like, in my world, I have two types. I have the mountain dwarves and the hill dwarves. Hill dwarves are the ones that are more willing to go out. They'll go outside. They'll set up the trade routes. Mountain dwarves, they're the ones that have those empires that have been under this one single mountain for the last 10,000 years. If you break in... You're completely and utterly smurfed.
Yeah.
Their defense, they practice it. They've been mining. They know that there's things in the ground. They might be keeping those things from getting out.
Yeah.
They've been in the Underdark. They've been below the Underdark.
And so the things that my dwarves will be doing is people will be looking on the dwarves as isolationist, and you know they don't want to deal with the outside world. Well, no, they're just keeping this horde, nasty things of the Underdark
and
from reaching the surface.
They're very
That's what they've been... That's what they've been doing for centuries, and they were
a little busy to go out and
They were set upon this task centuries ago, but everyone just forgot that they set them on this task, except the dwarves.
Well,
the dwarves
also,
just know that we've always done this.
As a lawful society, they believe that if they set something loose,
they got to deal with it.
So in your world, if that's the task they've set, in my world, it's not usually the task. It's we just dug up a Balrog. It is our job now to keep that Balrog from getting out. Now, is that because they care about some humans that are farming down there? Not necessarily.
No.
But it's just their duty because did it.
That's what dwarves are. Dwarves are honor bound.
Their honor. Their clan honor.
Yeah.
I always look at it from their clan's point of view.
But they are honor bound. When they set their mind to something, they won't stop until
And yeah, I feel like that when it's not, if it's just minor infractions, it's going to be like fist fights, and nobody's going to get killed. But if it's a clan war,
if it's something vicious.
Yeah, I mean, that's what is it? What's that famous family fight down in Texas? You know, the McLowrys and the Clantons, or something like that. Where you have, you know, generations of, in this case, generations of dwarves who are holding grudges and fighting against this other family because that's how it's always been.
Yeah.
They don't even remember what the fight started over.
Yeah, it could have been something just entirely
like
hey, he drank his water before my father did. Oh, well, 300 years later, they're still fighting over it, you know?
And depending on how vicious it is, it could just be, we don't like clans.
We don't talk to them,
We don't talk to them.
We rock in this, I see to kill them on sight.
We always raise prices to them by 10%.
Yeah. To kill them on sight, you know.
Which for something like they stole our daughter back in, but also don't have as many like the elves, they don't have as many children.
Yeah, it's the Romeo and Juliet, the Montagues, and the
Capulets.
The Capulets.
You just don't see a lot of the dwarves,
except without the poofy pants.
Yeah, well, no, you could have poofy pants.
My dwarves don't wear poofy pants. Poofy pants get in the way of mining.
Yeah, that's true.
But also my dwarves, a lot of them, especially the hill dwarves, aren't necessarily afraid of vast quantities of water. So they'll go on boats, and actually there could be dwarven pirates. They're also willing to do... They're a lot more willing to do some things that humans aren't they're less likely to break bones.
Yeah, they're built denser. The only race in my world that is actually terrified of large quantities of water are the Alhassans. Because they're like, water's not supposed to be moving around for you like that. Okay, we know the ocean, we understand the ocean, because we can see that, but mile and a half wide, you know... things of water moving really fast with things living in it. That's not natural. Water needs to be still, because to them, the ocean doesn't move. You know, they don't understand tides. They don't know anything. They just know it's there. It's a large body of water. It doesn't move. Water's not supposed to be doing this. They'll get to go, that's not right.
I always dislike the whole elf-dwarf, just immediate dislike.
Yeah, again, that goes back to Lord of the Rings. People just get it straight. Oh, hey, well, Lord of the Rings didn't like each other, so my dwarves and elves don't like each other.
My dwarves didn't like each other originally, but they've gotten pretty much past that. But that was because, you know, the elves and the dwarves who gave them the magic to keep their, you know, continent from being completely destroyed. Mm-hmm. So they think it's their fault that the continent was, you know, turned into an undead kingdom. No, they turned into an undead kingdom because of the damage the elves had done to it. You know,
see, when I play,
they're pretty much past that by now.
When I play a dwarf, it's usually that they just dislike everyone.
Just
the ones I play occasionally are. It takes a lot for them to like you. But a dwarf, an NPC dwarf.
Because typically, you want to look at dwarves as being stubborn.
Tune in tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel.
Hello, gamers out there, everyone. This is Peter Adkiss, and I cordially invite you to come to Gen Con Indianapolis, August 16 to 19 at the Indianapolis Convention Center for our 40th anniversary, the biggest party yet for gamers.
There's a game going on and you're invited. Join Don, Derek, and Jeremiah when they go out of character every week, or sneak a peek into the lives of your favorite game designers on Inside Track. Hear Pod Gamer cast judgment. The best games and the worst games are now subject to the King's Court. Get your gaming fix at podgamer.com. That's PULPGamer.com. It's your turn to move.
Yes, and I'd have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for these blasted kids and their dogs.
And we're back.
We're back with the wonderful three-parter, and today on the three-parter, we are, Nathan's got a rave for us this time. Jeremy's got character, and I've got a review. So let's kick it off with the rave.
Once my perfect world was gone, I knew you ruined everything in the nicest way.
The rave.
I have a rave here today, but I have a lament as well. And I'll start off with the lament. The lament is why did I wait, like, what is it, 9 years after it came out to play Castlevania Symphony of the Night? As most of you Xbox 360 owners know, this last Thursday, Xbox Live Arcade released the first game to exceed 50 megabytes on the arcade, and that game was Castlevania Symphony of the Night. I'd heard many things about it, and everyone said it was a really great game, and it was $10. I had the points. I've had the points for a while. I got them from that crazy Xbox Live Rewards thing that I did. So I went ahead and I bought it. And I started playing it. It seemed like fun when I started playing it, but I could only play it for a little bit. And so I played it again Saturday when all my friends were there. All my friends who have actually played it before. And they started talking about it and pointing out things to me. And I kept playing. And then we started our Mutants and Mastermind game. We played Mutants and Mastermind game. Went back and played some TMNT. Then everybody left, and I went back to Castlevania, and I played until 7 o'clock this morning. 7 o'clock. And then I came over to Ethan's apartment at about 12:30, because I woke up at like 11:50 and made a mad dash for the shower and on my way. The game is incredible. I've never played a side-scrolling game with this level of detail and depth. It just hasn't been done. Hasn't been done since. It's unbelievable that, you know, this game ever came out. The fact that there's so many different things you can do, like, so far I can transform into a wolf and mist. I know 5 spells of different things I can push out on the enemies, which, you know, do horrible, nasty things. Like the one, the soul steal. You steal all their energy, turn it into energy for yourself, which is very helpful when you're in a full room and you've got like 20 hit points left. $10 is a steal on this game. Yes, it doesn't have next generation graphics. Yes, the music is old. Yes, it doesn't have any CG video clips. And the voice recording sounds like it's done in someone's bathroom. But the game is just so incredible. And there's such a level of variety. I heartily recommend this game for everybody. I can't emphasize this enough. And as I ooze and wax nostalgically about this game. It reminds me of all the old side-scroller games I used to play when I was in, like, fifth grade, you know, back when the Nintendo was popular. Anybody who's got an Xbox 360 or a PlayStation 1 or 2 or 3 that is completely backwards compatible, which means sorry, Europe, go find this game. Anywhere that sells old games, find it. Buy it. Xbox Live, you guys got the head, the one up, because you just go out and buy from the Xbox Live store. Anybody else? Get it. It rocks. It is so cool. And it's like 1.5 games, because once you beat the castle one way, you have to beat it through an inverted castle as well to actually get the real ending. So, everybody check it out. It rocks. And I'll probably play it till like 4 o'clock in the morning tonight, too. Even though I have to work tomorrow.
We've got character.
Do you have character, Jeremy? Give us character.
Okay, well, the NPC I'd like to talk about today, NPC I introduced a long, long time ago, called Mad Max. Now, Mad Max was a troublemaker who... Who was a priest of chaos, which means he did not worship a god, and in his mind, he didn't worship a philosophy, though don't ask me how that works. He worshipped chaos.
In all its chaos glory, embodied.
In all of its horror, and everything. Now, Mad Max, he was not part of the Chaos Horde. That was too lawful for him. He was a priest of chaos, and when you saw Mad Max, the first thing you would notice is the smell. It was a mixture between feces and olives and maybe a little bit of cinnamon, and it was horrifying.
He was nasty.
He was dressed in a simple, torn, dirty cloak. We're pretty sure he didn't wear anything under the cloak. It was very open. No shoes, nothing.
He was nasty.
And he had a tendency to cackle. Cackle, cackle, cackle at random times. He would just cackle about the stupidest things. Sometimes he'd fall on the ground. He would spit. He would shout. He would moan.
He threw crap at one point in time.
Now, he was with the party. And the thing was, his stats were variable. All of his mental stats were variable. And he was like a level... This was second edition. But he was like a level 20 cleric. I mean, he could cast whatever he wanted. The problem is at random times he would revert to the intellect of a two-year-old and would occasionally throw crap at you, at enemies, things like that. Well, he was on a quest to find the Orb of Chaos, and he met up with the party when they were in hell. And the party traipsed through hell with this crazy man, and when they finally found the Orb of Chaos, he disappeared on them. He took the Orb of Chaos and disappeared, leaving him in hell in a castle of a demon lord. Well, it turned out that the party continued up through the tower, the demon's fortress, and one by one they were picked off by the traps. And at one point, the last remaining survivor, two of the players had got to the top, and there was a wizard's... They assumed it was like a wizard's lab or some such. And there was four doors, and one player went in one door, and the mark of symbol of death went off and killed him. And the other player's like, great, so I can't go in that door. He picked another door and walked through. And this was fine. No symbol of death. And he looked around the room for a second. He noticed there was nothing here, so he turns around and starts walking out, and there was a symbol of death on the other side of the door. And the party died. And I'm sorry I laughed, but it was funny. That whole campaign was funny.
You can't see it, but I'm pulling from the shoulder and flipping him off, because that was the first game. I played it with Sam as well, our friend Sam. Our first games playing D&D under him, and... Sam made it over the top. I died like the third person. Sam made it all the way to the top, watched someone else die, walked in the room, and went to come back out and got slaughtered.
The thing was, at the bottom of the tower where the Orb of Chaos was, the party could have turned around, But they didn't. They kept going up. And I was just like, fine, guys. Anyway, Mad Max now has the Orb of Chaos, is running around existence, helping and hindering. He has made... Every once in a while, he'll pop into a game for a little while. Most people either run in fear just because of his smell. But he is useful once in a while. He has his uses. I mean, he is a powerful, powerful priest. And he can cast basically anything. The problem is he worships chaos in all its glory. And chaos doesn't... Well... Anyway, you can understand how much problems that would cause to a party. I'm wondering if I'm going to introduce him again. But anyway, Mad Max was a lot of fun. Take a character. I didn't mean him to screw over the party, but he did have a goal in mind. And his goal was to get the Orb of Chaos, and once that goal was accomplished, the rest of the party wasn't his problem. It was nothing to do with good or evil, it had to do with they no longer existed for him. So, use NPCs like that. I mean, there will be NPCs are people too, and they have their own goals, and every once in a while those goals have a tendency to leave a party in the dust.
Yeah, literally.
Also, feel free to put your symbols of death on the inside of the door. Especially if you're a demon lord. And that's all I got.
The review. Well, I'm reviewing the television show I've actually been rather keen on catching up on, Smallville, actually. And this coming from a guy when Smallville first came out, I absolutely refused to go see it because, you know, I'm a purist when it comes to some things like that. And I was like, what? Superman in high school? What? Lex Luthor's there? All right, I'm done. Well, enough people told me that it's actually a pretty darn good show. So, I said, all right, fine. I put the first season into my Netflix queue, and it finally came around recently, so I watched it. And the first season is kind of rocky. It's interesting. But, you know, sort of like went up and I posted on the forum, said, hey, you know, I'm not feeling it. This first season's not very good. Everyone's telling me, hey, watch, wait for the second season. It gets really good. So I was like, all right, fine. I'll give it a chance. You know, enough people tell me it's a good show. So, the second season gets here, and I pretty much sit down and watch it in about 3 days, because it was really, really good. Well, I've watched all the way through season 3 right now, and I am very happy to eat my words and say that, hey, Smallville is an actually very good show. I like the actors in it, I like the stories in it, they're interesting, they're captivating. It's an interesting take on the Superman story. It's sort of the ultimate Spider-Man type approach, or the ultimate approach like Marvel has, where they reimagine it in modern day times, you know, restarting the story, and that's what Smallville has done. In an entirely geeky point of view, they do a lot of cool stuff with homages to the movies and to the comic books and to the old TV series, with the use of music. Christopher Reeve actually had 2 guest spots so far. Before he passed away. The voice of Jor-El on the show, as you only hear him in voice, is actually Terrence Stamp, which is awesome, because obviously Terrence Stamp was General Zod. And, you know, you get good character actors like Julian Glover, who plays Lionel Luthor, who's the father of Lex Luthor in the series, and he's very good. He's actually one of my favorite actors from Brimstone. He played the Devil. It's a very good show. I'm actually very happy to be watching it. It's definitely been added to my list of stuff to watch on a weekly basis once I catch up with the 6th season. I'm pretty fascinated by it. I'm pretty happy with where the show is going thus far, and hopefully it stays up that way. And I enjoy it quite a bit. about it.
And that, I guess, concludes our three-parter for this show.
Yes. It'll be back.
What a filthy job.
Could be worse.
How?
Could be raining.
Quick, shut that door, man.
As if that's going to stop it.
Look, it's not my fault the elder sign didn't work.
That's because it's shaped like a star.
No, it's shaped like a tree.
Star!
Tree!
Star! Well, it's too late now. We're the last ones.
What about Lady Hetherington?
She set on fire, then exploded.
And Father O'Leary?
He plucked out his own eyeballs and ate them.
Damn! I wish I'd visited YoggSothoth.com more often.
YoggSothoth.com?
Yes, you know, that Call of Cthulhu website. Jolly useful. It's got forums, news, even interviews with the great and the undead.
Oh, I do wish you hadn't said that.
Oh, my lord! Stay away from me, you horror! No!
Well, you'll not take me! What? No! Please, no!
The Yogg Radio, a Cthulhu podcast from YoggSothoth.com.
Robo, excuse me, Robo. Any special message for all the kids watching at home?
Ow. Stay out of trouble.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.
You can visit our website at www.canadiancrusaders.com. You can leave us an audio, call or voicemail line at 206-338-2414. Visit us on the Frapper map, send us an email, or go by the forums on Fistful of Comics, or go to our website and click on the forums link to get to the forums, and leave us a message there, and we'll get back to you absolutely as soon as we can. Thanks for listening. Gamers Haven Podcast is released under a Creative Commons, non-commercial, attribution, share-alike 2.5 license and is a proud member of the Fistful of Comics podcast audio group. And if you slow the drone, you'll be fast to die. There's a new sheriff in town, but he's all alone. It's a lonely
General's Arcadius, I know you hated him because of...
Well, he killed my prostitutes.
For killing your prostitutes, yeah.
He also
beheading
killed
your prostitutes.
Yeah, that
and then slapping you guys around, taking your stuff and throwing you into slave pens. And then just going, yeah, I'm done with you.
I have his boots.
Paul. I wonder how Paul Cthulhu's doing.
I'm sure he's doing fine.
He probably was eaten by Cthulhu.
No, you don't know Paul very well.
Cthulhu doesn't eat his spokespeople.
I don't know.
They're the last ones. Yeah, they're the last ones to get eaten. Cthulhu
election. Well, I'm glad
Cthulhu
we have the fish.
Next
yeah.
to last.
Who was he at this time?
When he signed the contract?
Yeah.
Oh. I want to say it was about 7th or 8th level. Roundabouts.
I still think Fareed would have gotten 4th. Or he would have... Because... Pit fiends have it in their mind when a debt is fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point he would have done something big enough.
See, the thing is, the Fareed you guys ran into is several millennia since that, so he is actually leveled out a bit more. Back when he first came out of that prison, he'd been there for a while.
Yeah.
And he was a bit loopy from it.
But even being a bit loopy, at some point he would just be like, the druid would be like, guys, there's this pit fiend, he's helping me out, can't go near any orphanages, can't go... Why don't we just stay out in the wilderness?
Mm-hmm.
Getting attacked by a bear or something?
I turned this into a whole big... The whole arcing story was... The character had to go find these 5 pieces of armor, this wooden armor, that would basically resurrect Ilana. He got the first 3 pieces and then just started whining. Because he lost all his druidic abilities.
Yeah.
And I would give them back to him in chunks. Meanwhile, he was going off and he was getting illusionist abilities from multi-classing. And I warned him. I talked to him like that. This is going to be slow going. This is going to be tough. You brought this on yourself.
He could have also classed.
He went through the first three pieces and then just started whining and bitching.
So
Anthony
he could have actually resurrected her.
Mm-hmm. And defeated Fareed.
And then we would have been dealing with
Alona instead of Fareed.
Who would have?
Or you probably would have been dealing with Alona, Obadiah, and then the other.
See, ones. I like Alona. She's more of a hippie though.
Yeah.
She is the tree hugging hippie. She drives a little, you know, hippie mobile.
But I sat and thought about it. It's like, what could, in Fareed's mind, what could he do that would, one, be justifiable for him and do good for him because he wants good for him, and also help Rostik, but what would he consider to be helping Rostik? Been like, okay, he would want to become his god so he could give him his divine power. Twisted, yes, but Pitbean would do it.
And not to mention, he could have looked at this the other way and gone neutral evil,
mm-hmm.
and he could have become the first high priest, and instead of in the afterlife of being a little dog, he'd be...
Yeah, he's on the leash with him.
He would be a Pitbean, the powerful Pitbean, mm-hmm. priest.
Yeah.
There's two ways he could have twisted this, and instead he went the whiny route.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I told my friend Aaron, it's like, well, I need some GMing advice. That's the best GMing advice I can give you for D&D is don't think of a storyline, really. Think of ways to screw with the players. How can I screw with the characters? And then stories will evolve from that. And that's what that first campaign was.
You suck so bad.
That was a fun... Because he walks in and he's like waiting for me to have him do a save. I'm like, there's no save. He looks around, there's no way out. And he's just like... Okay. He turns to leave. And there's a small death above the doorway.
He did 80 points to a first level character.
Oh, he was more than first. He was like third.
No, he was first. He and I both were first level. That was our first game. I was being tortured by goblins in the bottom area of that dungeon. You goof. Dude. And I have class tomorrow night.
So do I. I have a test tomorrow night.
I do too.
Yeah, psychology.
I don't.
Shut up.
You just work till like 10 o'clock at night.
We're gonna lock you up with Mansquito.
I'm gonna work till 7 now. It'd be in a museum in this permanent, like, mithril glass, indestructible orb.
His boots?
Yes. With inscriptions of the party member defeating him, and a story and floats above
he
some
killed
museum.
My prostitute. the story would probably read, he killed my ladies in waiting,
yes.
You know?
And go on, and then be like, and there would be the boots, and they'd still be smoking. Gavin Chan would still smoke.